This is Libby Gore on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
If I played you something, would that drive you bananas?
Ooh.
It's the sound of someone chewing.
Ooh.
If these sorts of noises actually drive you into a rage, you might be suffering from a condition called misophonia. It's a sensitivity to certain sounds. Certain sounds can have a harmful effect on people. Not all sounds have the same effect on someone as they do someone else, but it can give you an emotional response. It can trigger you into a rage. We're going to call it sound rage this morning, and very shortly, Miriam Westcott, who's an audiologist from Deneen Westcott Moore Audiology, will be talking to you about misophonia or sound rage and taking your calls on the sorts of things that just make you want to rip your hair out. Also this morning,
he's a rebel and he'll never ever be any good. He's a rebel cause he never ever does what he should. Just because he doesn't do what
What a way to wake up with the dulcet sounds of an 18-year-old Deborah Byrne singing whilst she graduated from Young Talent Time. But it was the song, really, I wanted you to turn your mind to. Rebel kids. How do they turn out? Do they always turn out bad? Can you escape a rebellious upbringing to actually become an inspirational leader in society? Well, there's a woman who believes that we need to hear stories of kids who weren't doing too good when they were kids, who grew up to be beaters, world beaters. Kids Who Did is the name of her book. Her name, the author, is Kirsty Murray, and she will be joining you after 10:30 to talk about real kids who ruled, rebelled, survived, and thrived. It's always good to know, you know, that people grow and develop and that everyone has a chance of actually winning in life. Plus, Sunday school. Yep, we help you with your VCE English, whether you're doing it or whether your kid is doing it, someone you know is doing it, or your students do it. This morning, Measure for Measure, Shakespeare's classic play. So good morning. It is 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. Miriam Westcott joins you to talk about those sounds that can drive you into a rage. Good morning, Miriam.
Good morning.
What an interesting area of study for an audiologist.
Fascinating to me.
Where does your passion stem from? When did you suddenly become aware that certain noises, which might be nothing to me, can be absolute emotional triggers for you?
Well, I don't personally have misophonia, but I've been working with people who have tinnitus for a long time now, about 25 years. And the concept of misophonia stemmed from the work that's being done with tinnitus when it became obvious that people who don't tolerate their tinnitus terribly well could also be reactive to external sounds. And it became obvious that there was a need for a term that explained a very strong dislike of external sounds. And that concept morphed into an awareness that there were quite a lot of people who had an involuntary aversion to particular sounds. And that idea was, I suppose, first identified about 30 years ago. And the term misophonia took hold in the community, and it appeared that it was much more widespread than was initially realised. And it now actually means an aversive reaction to very specific sounds that trigger involuntarily a rage that most people with misophonia realise is way out of kilter for the actual sound that produces that response.
A disproportionate anger to what they're hearing.
Yeah, rage, disgust, annoyance,
offence. Is it something
offense.
That you just put up with, or is it something that you actually have to manage?
There are degrees.
The same thing that
there
I just
said? There are degrees.
Yeah.
You know, there's a spectrum.
What sorts of responses to noises have you been presented with?
Well, I see, of course, the more extreme end of the spectrum
Come on,
in my clinic.
Tell us a story.
I suppose Well, I see people who suffer terribly with this, and it's very easy to belittle this reaction, to trivialise it. I see a great deal of distress, anguish, difficulty coping, anxiety.
What sorts of noises?
Well, the sorts of trigger sounds are typically the reaction to people sniffing, eating, breathing, repetitive movements, repetitive sounds, and
drips on a window pane, or
It can be that, but it's more likely to be sounds produced by other people.
Ah.
So, and it's, I suppose you'd have to say it's a reaction to sounds intruding into one's personal space. So I think there's a strong element of, I don't want that sound in my space about it.
Is that sound a representative of the person?
It's not usually a sort of subliminal, I hate that person reaction. It's more, I don't want that sound in my space.
Right. It's too intrusive.
Yeah. Yeah.
What percentage of the population would suffer from misophonia?
We don't really know.
Well, shall we find out?
Yeah, it's more widespread than we thought.
Shall
yeah.
we find out? Yeah. Okay. So what I like to do is throw open the phone lines. I've got a blank board of calls at this stage. Every line is free. Right. I'll play a song, and that's generally our trigger for people to ring. So this morning, if you have a noise, a sound that drives you bananas, I need to tell you that I do. I actually am enraged by the sound of very close family member, crunching grapes. He is the only person I know who can crunch grapes. And it drives me nutty because he does it near my ear all the time. I hate it.
Grapes only?
No, he can crunch all sorts of things. It's crunching.
Okay.
Can't stand it. Okay. Really loud crunching.
Okay.
Like it fills me with, like, as much as I love this person, I can't stand the crunching. Ever since I was a teenager, can't stand the crunching. Mm. So if you have this similar problem with something, I'm interested to know what it is because Miriam doesn't know what the percentage of the population that suffers from it. Good morning to Annie. You're speaking with Miriam Westcott, audiologist, about misophonia, sound rage. Go ahead, Annie.
Hi, Miriam. Hi, Libby. Yeah, so this is definitely something I can relate to. At work, I used to not be able to eat my lunch in the tea room with other people because of the sounds that they would make when they were eating.
Isn't that interesting, Miriam?
Yes. So if you're able to avoid doing that, I suppose that's one way of dealing with it. Obviously, the reaction can be very embarrassing in a workplace, and I've seen this many times in my patients.
What did you actually do to sort yourself out, Annie? Did you think the problem was with you or the problem was with them?
So I definitely felt like the problem was with them and they shouldn't have been making that sound when they were eating. But I don't feel like I had uncontrollable rage. I was just able to leave the room and then it would be fine.
You managed it well then.
That's what you have to do. But isn't it funny? Like, isn't it funny knowing that other people have this same trigger about eating noises or breathing noises even?
Definitely. And I wanted to ask you, is it often worse if it's quieter background noise? Because that's what I...
Oh, she accidentally hung up. Give us the call back, Annie. You hung up on yourself.
I'll answer that question, though.
Yes.
It will be. If there's background noise, then that will partially or maybe even fully mask the sound that's the trigger. So that is actually one of the strategies that we use to try and minimise this reaction. Using sound therapeutically is very helpful.
So you put on some other...
Exactly.
Interesting. All right, Carmen, your turn.
Good morning, Miriam and Libby. Thank you for having me on the show.
Our pleasure.
This goes along the line with the silence that comes with the irritation. And my irritation is when you're at the movies and you hear people rustling chip packets and lolly packets and things like that. It absolutely irritates me.
Yes, it's intrusive, annoying, distracting. And because it primes that sort of response, it immediately attracts your attention and takes your focus away from the movie that you want to watch uninterruptedly.
Absolutely.
Look, I think we all get annoyed by that.
So how do you fix that?
I think you try and train your attention away from over-monitoring that. But nevertheless, I think everyone gets annoyed by that. So I don't know that I'd call that an abnormal reaction.
Only if you turn around and grab the chips and tip it over their head. Hasn't gone that far, has it, Carmen?
No, definitely not. I do avoid the movies.
But that's really interesting because Annie from Armidale has sent a text saying, I never cooked soup as I can't tolerate my husband slurping.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, there's a sort of, there isn't a clear line between what is a misophonia reaction and what isn't. I mean, everybody perhaps will be grossed out by a sound of somebody slurping heavily, won't they? So there isn't a clear point and everyone is different. So I think I can't really say clearly what is an abnormal reaction and what isn't.
How do you tell what's an abnormal reaction and what isn't?
I think it becomes a functional issue, doesn't it? I think if people are finding that they're really getting very angry or they're finding it difficult to control their reaction, then it starts to tip into potentially being problematic.
Okay. Lauren?
Oh, hi. Hello, Miriam and Libby.
Hello.
Hi.
Morning, I should say.
Go on, tell us the funny story, but that's actually a bit disturbing.
Well, it's sort of, yeah, what it is, it's really my husband, and the noise that really irritates him and can send him into a bit of a fury is the noise of doves, peaceful doves. You know how they make that goo-goo, 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 and it's repetitive? So he can actually leave the room and go out and get the broom and hit the fence to make the move on or the tree. So I think they really do irritate him.
What would you do if husband came to see you, Miriam? Would you ask him why the noise? I mean, how do you unpack?
I think, and it's hard not to give a really long-winded answer to that. When we have a noise like that annoys us, we start to become overly vigilant to those sorts of sounds, which is a sort of an intuitive reaction. But the vigilance actually escalates the problem. So the idea is to perhaps acknowledge the reaction and then try and manage the vigilance. The more you monitor a sound like that, the more you cue that subconscious part of your brain that it's a really important sound. And the problem then starts to escalate. So I think it the answer lies in understanding how the brain processes sound. We all, the ear is a very open system and all the filtering is done in the brain subconsciously. So when I see people for misophonia, I explain all of this in detail. And once you really get all of that, then it all makes a lot more sense. So while you can't sort of stop doves making that sort of sound environmentally, then you can understand how your brain is responding to that and try and control it, try and divert your attention away from over-monitoring the environment and try and use sound therapeutically to minimise the intensity of that response.
It's interesting, though, that doves cooing is actually a gentle sound. It's not like it's sticky.
Once you've made that association, you know, once the brain has worked out, I don't like that sound and it triggers that sort of aversive reaction, then you get a neural pathway. That means the next time you hear that sound, that reaction intensifies.
I wonder what Danny's sound is. Hi, Danny. Dan?
Oh, Jan. Yes,
Jan.
It's me.
Hello. For some reason, there's a D there, but
I was wafting off into analysing the problem that I have with the sounds. Was when we were at a cafe and in the afternoon, they always seemed to be cleaning up and they'd put the crockery, the cups, clunking on the barista's thing, and the cutlery, when they were wiping and cleaning the cutlery, they'd throw that into the containers and they're making that high-pitched crockery and cutlery sound that I've even got up and walked over and said, can you please stop doing that? Do you realise that sound is, you can't hear it, but it echoes in the cafe?
Right.
And frustrates me.
Okay.
I also have tinnitus.
Okay.
Ah.
Okay. Well, if you have tinnitus, impact sounds are a jarring sound. As we get older, the our sense of hearing tends to deteriorate at that high frequency end, and that means we hear impact sounds more jarringly. And so you're being reactive to those sorts of sounds that are jarring to everybody, but perhaps more jarring still to you. And therefore, they're more annoying as well. And and I suspect you're reacting to that. And that's causing that reaction for you.
But is there any way that can be filtered out? How could Jen filter it out? Oh, you should see some of these calls coming in. They're really good.
I mean, it's hard to filter away a sound that's so, being heard so jarringly and has become so annoying. I'm not quite sure what the answer to that might be. Maybe leave the cafe.
Leave the cafe. Tammy?
Yes.
Tell me this one.
Yes. How are you, Libby?
I'm really plugging into this one.
I am quite relieved to hear that my my condition has a name. I think it goes back a long way when I was younger and we were asked to leave the room when we were eating chips and apples. My father had an intolerance, and now I have a son into nutrition who insists on eating 6 carrots a day, and it is driving me insane.
Oh, the crunching.
The crunching. I can't stand it. And to make things worse, he even put as my ringtone on my phone him crunching a carrot.
Oh.
Oh, yes. So, and I do get that rage. I really do.
Meet Miriam. Miriam, Tammy.
That is a bit mean, isn't it? I think when you grow up with a parent perhaps who has that degree of reaction, then everybody does become a bit vigilant in the family, yeah. Don't they?
So, I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, again, I think, you know, the issue is vigilance and being sort of overly aware. And when there is a sound that's irritating, then the whole family can start to become somewhat irritated by it. And your son has obviously not become irritated by it.
He thinks it's funny.
Yeah. I should be pleased because he's very, very much into nutrition, but I just wish it wasn't carrots.
Why don't you cook him? That'll sort him out.
That's right.
Cook all the carrots. Take his carrots and make them all soft and mushy.
Well, exactly.
I think the good thing for you is it doesn't cause you distress and you can smile about it because the people up at the more distressed end of the spectrum really do suffer with this.
Yeah, we have to remember that. Thank you, Tammy. But thank you, Tammy. Denise?
Yes.
Your turn.
How are you? My problem is actually, it only started last semester because I'm a student, is the tapping on the keyboard of a computer.
Oh.
I've actually found it's become extremely intrusive. I didn't notice it straight away, but it started getting to the point where it made me incredibly anxious, to the point where I can't do the work. I burst into tears this week because I find that it stops all my mental processes. I've tried very hard to ignore the sound and push it out of my consciousness, but it's just got to me, and it's also very painful, the sound.
Okay, I do see this one quite commonly because it's a repetitive sound and you know it's going to keep coming, so you anticipate it. And your brain is now primed to wait for it and to, again, know it's coming. So I'd use a combination of acknowledging it's going to come, using other sound therapeutically. So you've got a low-level sound that's not, you know, intrusive or annoying that you choose and you control, and it's passive, you don't attentively listen to it. And some form of distraction. So if you are, is it you making the sound or is it other people around you making the sound?
It's the whole class, you know, it's just that consistent. And if I'm in the library and I hear some person tapping their keyboard at an irritating rate.
Okay.
As well. I mean, there's no need for them to hit it at such a rate because they're so, you know, they're very, very touch sensitive these days. I don't know because they've got those silly nails on. But
noise cancelling headphones help? Could you actually get someone sent my jarring sound as power tools? I recently discovered noise cancelling headphones. What a blessing! But no use in cafes, of course. That's from Louise in Hawthorne. But in a library, could you not?
Yeah, so I think I'd have some, you know, either noise cancelling headphones or sound going into the ear in some way or another. And
I can use that in a library situation, but you can't exactly use that when you have a teacher also talking to you.
Mm.
You can try some way of having the sound coming in at a low level, so you can still hear external sounds.
Yeah.
But you're elevating the noise floor very slightly and just creating a low-level sound just to take the edge off it. And training your brain to not monitor for the sound. Now, that's really hard to do, but if you can back off the vigilance, then that really makes a difference.
And, you know, maybe knowing, Denise, that this actually is a condition, that could also help as well, rather than just thinking they're the problem or you're the problem, that this actually is something that can be managed also might take the edge off
it. That's actually quite useful because I find that I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning as well if it's really, really quiet and I have to put the radio on now to get me back to sleep.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah, and
but
look,
it's all occurred around about the same time.
See that using sound therapeutically as a tool rather than as a strategy, rather than as a weakness in some way. You know, using sound therapeutically is very helpful. And the ear is such an open system and the brain is, you know, all the filtering does take place in the brain. So we don't have a mechanism with our hearing like we do with our vision. You know, we can close our eyes or turn our head if we don't want to see something. The brain receives every sound that we hear. So we have to be prepared to have a few tricks like that to try and limit sometimes the amount of auditory input going to the brain.
I hope this helps, Denise. And if you need further help, I would suggest going to your GP, getting a referral to an audiologist and actually treating it as something very real. It's not something that you're making up.
There's a lot of information on our website if you want to have a look.
Which is Deneen Westcott.
More.com.au.
Okay, good. Ellie, your turn.
Oh, hi, Miriam and Libby. I've suffered from this since I was a child. It's only in recent years that I've realised that there's a name for it and that I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought I was a little bit mental. There's a lot of things that are problems, like I cannot begin to list them. Everything you have mentioned and probably more, and I use earplugs a lot. I sleep with them every night, but I use them through the day. We play music at dinner time or eat dinner in front of the telly. Honestly, I can't even begin to tell you all the things, but I've often wondered, and don't freak out by this, but I'm not going to do this by any means, but it has crossed my mind over the years when you hear about people who murder people and they have no reason for doing it and you just think, wow, that's bizarre. And then you think, I'm wondering whether they annoyed them to the point where, and you can't rationalise this, how you feel about these sounds that are annoying and you can't express them. And it's only, as I said, in recent years that it's even been discussed. So beforehand, perhaps people just thought that they're mental and they just couldn't cope with it anymore. And so they've killed the person eating the banana that's annoying them.
Well,
interesting. That might sound weird, but
it does sound a bit weird and I hope that you're okay. If you're not, I suggest you either call Lifeline or go and see your GP. But, Ellie, here's the interesting thing. We've talked about this often. With these more esoteric conditions, often people suffer in silence. That's why we like to talk about them, even with a sense of humour, to normalise it. But with these esoteric conditions, many people think they are the only one, and that's what causes many of the problems, Miriam.
I agree, and I think that people are often frightened of the intensity of their rage. It's involuntary, and they worry terribly about what they might do in the grip of that rage. So I think understanding the condition a little better, and I think, for me, I'm an audiologist, not a psychologist. So if I do see people who are frightened of what they might do in the grip of that rage, then, you know, my role is largely evaluative and explanatory.
But do you direct?
Oh, absolutely. So when people come to me for a consultation, that, as I said, that's my role, and I give them a lot of information about strategies to try and get them on the path to self-management of a desensitization process, because I think it is possible to at least partially desensitize, even though the forums are a little bit bleak about that possibility. But in terms of managing those emotional reactions, then it is over to a psychologist to perhaps guide people through that process. But people are frightened about what they might do in the grip of that moment.
Thank you for your call, Ellie. I've received a couple of text messages with interesting offers. For instance, Bridget from Geelong says, there are websites by a sound engineer, MyNoise and Carmi Leon, with a social conscience. You can choose many noises disguising sounds or very simply create your own. It's really easy to do. So that's what you were talking about with the background noise.
Yeah, I think there are all sorts of sounds that can be used. I'm a little against people paying money for the sounds. I don't think there are necessarily special sounds. Low-level sound is very helpful, and there are many, many apps that are soothing and calming.
Noise, and, sorry to interrupt, but this is a continuous text I keep getting from different people. Noise-reducing earplugs and earbuds.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're tools?
Yeah, absolutely. In the States, they use hearing aids set up to produce sound. I think that's rather an expensive way to go, to have a portable and discrete source of sound. But with the Bluetooth earbuds that are coming out now, then there are ways of having sound fed into the ear in a discrete manner. So there are all sorts of possibilities to have that, and to use sound as a way of actually detaching from an environment, which is what people are doing all the time, walking around with headphones on in the train, etc., going into a little bubble of auditory privacy to disengage from an environment they don't have to engage with.
Yeah, but you have to be safe as well.
You have to be safe as well, yes. Yeah, so there are lots of ways of isolating or detaching from an environment that has become threatening.
There are many calls that I can't get to because it's now 21 minutes to 11 o'clock, and I apologise to all of the callers that I can't reach this morning, because there's Michael pouring things into a glass. The sound of water or whatever going into a glass drives him nuts. Daughters struggle with the babies and the sound. Other people, I'm so sorry we can't reach you. But what I can say is you're not making it up. It's actually a condition where noises can drive you nuts.
Yeah, it is.
Miriam Westcott, audiologist from Dunedin Westcott Moore Audiology. You've obviously got a website if people would like to find out more.
That's right, yeah.
Dunedin is D-I-N-E-E-N, Westcott, and Moore as in Ali Moore, M-O-O-R-E, Audiology. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Really fascinating. Really, really fascinating.